are listening to the Star Lores Podcast.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
Why, you stuck up, half-witted, scruffy-looking nerf herder!
But I was going into Tosche Station to pick up some power converters.
The galaxy is a big place, filled with all manner of celestial bodies. From gas giants to meteorites, stars, moons, collapsing stars, and other phenomena. Despite this vast array of these special objects, planets are of the greatest interest to living organisms. While some creatures make deep space their home, the vast majority of life has come from and remains on planets and moons. Here, delicate ecosystems support the life in complex webs of independent, interdependent, and biodiverse environments. Each planet is different, and to understand the various life forms and resulting cultures, one must understand how the planets are grouped together. These groupings can vary depending on the parameters by which the planet is being classified. Some classifications are based on size, atmospheric conditions, biomes, or social phenomenon, such as whether the planet was or is a homeworld of a particular sentient species, political or territorial alignment.
Types of planets. Planets can fall under any number of classification systems, from terrestrial to gas giants, moons, and planetoids. Size can vary, though gas giants, as their name implies, tend to be much larger than typical terrestrial ones, though even here there is room for exception.
Gas giants, often made of a failed star that refused to ignite, the gaseous fuels create massive, hyper-dense atmospheres. Planets like Bespin and Yavin, while uninhabitable by most species, without some form of technological assistance. Some gas giants had unique life forms that lived within layers of gas that supported life within their particular strata. These worlds often harbor valuable materials, attracting sentients that wish to harvest and mine the gases from the atmosphere. Most gas giants do have a solid core. However, the pressure and gases that compose the inner sphere are often too much for most sentient beings to even access. Because of the sheer size of these planets, their mass and resultant gravitational pull, they often capture large moons in their substantial gravitational orbits, which, more often than not, have also served as worlds of their own, such as Endor and Yavin Prime, or develop beautiful rings of ice and rocks. If a gas giant was inhabited by a non-native species, they would often rely on building floating structures and whole cities.
Non-gas giant planets are called terrestrial planets and can have any number of atmospheric or environmental features. They make up the vast majority of populated worlds. They are often described by a predominant environment or biome feature, such as a forest world or ocean world, but lack an official classification beyond a general description of their surface. There are only three official surface or environmental classifications, with others being colloquial terms used as general descriptors used in general parlance between spacers.
Double planet, also known as twin worlds or double worlds, are two similarly sized planets that orbit each other. This is a unique phenomenon that occurs in the Alderaan systems by the planets Tralis and Talus, which are thought to have been engineered by the Celestials to orbit each other.
Moons, planetoids, and asteroids. Many, quote, worlds and populated celestial bodies are not in fact planets at all, and can consist of moons such as those inhabited and orbiting the planets Onderon or Tython. Planetoids are objects too small to be classified as a planet in their own right, but still maintain a constant orbit around a star or in a system and have been known to be able to have atmospheres and support life. Asteroids could also sustain colonies or life, though they often lacked an atmosphere, and living on one involved extensive engineering, such as Pallas Massa, where the dying Padme Amidala gave birth to her secret twins.
Artificial planets and space stations. Not all life-sustaining astronomical bodies are natural occurring, and some space stations or artificial worlds are large enough to bear mention when discussing planetary bodies. The Death Star was one such space station. The size of a small moon, or world crafts, artificial planetoids that had terrestrial features that looked like naturally occurring ones, but were capable of independent movement and even hyperspace travel, and whose internal composition relied on artificial gravity fields and other artifice beneath the surface.
Surface or environmental classification. Enviro-diverse planets. Not an official terrestrial classification, many worlds are characterized by a single type of terrain, though they may have subbiomes of similar but distinct categorization. Some worlds exhibit a plethora of ecosystems and radically different environments. These worlds can, for lack of a better word, be described as Earth-like, and can exhibit a whole array of deserts, tundras, forests, jungles, and temperate zones. Some worlds may be broadly temperate and may lack some environments, such as Naboo, known for its lush plains and jungles, and subsurface waters, but is not known to have deserts or tundra regions. Alderaan is another example of mixed features, including grasslands, forests, mountains, and oceans. Biodiverse planets tend to have all manner of organisms, plant and animal life, as their varying biomes offer a wide array of environments to facilitate life in all its forms.
Water world. Terrestrial worlds whose primary feature was oceanic, or liquid, though some water worlds did have small islands or landforms, artificial or otherwise. Some worlds developed vast aquatic societies and were even able to develop spaceflight, such as on the planet Dak, the homeworld of the Mon Calamari and the Corrin. Kamino and Manan are two other known ocean worlds that also support civilizations that live above the waves in stilt or floating cities. While most known aquatic worlds appear to have water composed of oxygen and hydrogen, there are doubtless exists other worlds with surfaces covered in other fluids, made from other elements or solutions, though they appear either less common or less likely to be visited by the majority of galactic sentient life due to its inhospitable nature. The planet of Malastar, home of the Dug species, is known to be enviro-diverse. It has well-known methane lakes and rivers.
Sentient planets. Also unrecognized as an official classification, and so few and rare that only a handful have been known to exist, sentient planets are living, conscious organisms. Sentience among planets, while rare, was not unheard of. Yazantar, the extragalactic homeworld of the Yazong Vong, had a bonded connection with them. The planet perished before the Vong trekked across the void into the hopes of birthing a new world. Zonama, Sekhot, and Devorin were also notable examples of sentient planets. While Zonama Sekhot was birthed from the seed of the Yazantar, Devorin was a sentient planet native to the galaxy far, far away, and had taken to consuming anything that it came into contact with. Atmospheric classification.
Some planets were designated based on their atmospheric conditions and makeup, specifically if they were composed of nitrogen, oxygen, and hydrogen, to be considered breathable by most sentient species without the assistance of technology.
Type 1 atmospheres were rich in breathable air, though this does not preclude the presence of other gases that may not be safe or have long-term effects due to prolonged exposure. Planets with this atmospheric makeup typically had plentiful naturally occurring plant and animal life and attracted colonists from off-world, often leading to them to become settlements. These planets could also be referred to as Class M planets.
Type 2 atmosphere contains a breathable atmosphere, but also have many contaminants or lack of sufficient air pressure for extended direct exposure. Breath masks or breathing apparatus are recommended, depending on the particular physiology of a life form, as some species had wider tolerances for these factors. Though baseline humans may have experienced some form of detrimental effect from prolonged exposure.
Type 3 atmosphere lacked sufficient breathable air or other gases that made breathing difficult to impossible for humans or proximal life forms. Breath masks would be required to limit exposure, which would have immediate deleterious effects or could lead to incapacitation or even death.
Type 4 atmospheres required a fully self-sufficient environment suit. Type 4 atmospheres could be anything from a non-existent atmosphere to toxic or lethal gases fatal to specific sentients. More often than not, particularly in the cases of no atmosphere, life was rare or non-existent, though some species, like the gargantuan exogorth or the pestilent minok, were capable of surviving in the void of space. Other worlds like Doran were simply toxic to off-worlders, but perfectly suitable to flora and fauna that lived there. In all cases of atmosphere, unique life forms were able to breathe, or even required their specific atmospheric conditions to breathe, from whatever atmospheric type they fell under, such as the Gand or Keldor, who needed masks and breathing apparatuses in Type 1 environments, but could forego them in the natural atmospheric makeups of their respected homeworlds. Planets could also be broadly divided into two gravitational categories of high and low gravity, though not much is published about these specifics and thresholds for such categorization.
Administrative, political, or social classification. Homeworlds, often used to describe the origin planet of an individual or species, as well as what droids may refer to as their manufacturing point. Sometimes individuals who migrate between worlds may differentiate between their planet of origin and reference their birth world instead, as they have come to identify with their new world as their home, if they feel sufficiently settled. Homeworlds tended to be well settled and have intergalactic starports, as most species achieving this technological state had made their way into their wider galaxy. However, there also existed numerous primitive or insular worlds, where species would not engage with the wider galaxy for political, cultural, or technological reasons. In the case of species homeworlds, they may share a name with their planet of origin as an identifier, though this is not always the case. Such examples do include Zeltrons from the planet Zeltros, Deveronians from Deveron, or Kaminoans from Kamino. These lines can also be blurred, as is the case with the Mandalorians, who used it to identify their adopted homeworld, Mandalore, but also their social structure, even though their founding species were called the Tong, and they originated on Zell, later named Coruscant. Some species may take on a subculture or ethnic name, such as humans from Naboo, who might be called ethnic Nubians or the Naboo, and in contrast with the Gungans, who are true natives of the planet, but do not share the world's name. Humans, being one of the most numerous and widespread species, tend to take on identifiers from their adopted birth world or culture rather than their species, such as Mace Windu being a Koroni human, or Mon Mothma, who identifies herself as Chandrilin.
Agriworld. Some planets had solely given over to the economic development of agriculture. These worlds were valuable as their production capacity allowed them to ship excess foodstuffs to planets that lack the capacity to sustain their own populations without imports. From desolate planets prone to drought to the bustling city worlds that had long since lost any arable lands. While they varied in their political makeup, they tended towards corporate control, as foodstuffs could be a lucrative industry and one that would always have a never-ending stream of consumers or customers.
Ecumenopolis, used to describe the vast planet-spanning cities of worlds like Coruscant, Terrace, or Anaxes. Even here, there exists some variations, as some city-wide planets encompass every square inch of the surface, covering over most if not all natural landscapes, while others may only cover the surface and leave areas such as oceans or other protected areas somewhat intact. Ecumenopolises are heavily populated and have existed since 4,000 years before the Battle of Yavin, having been built up over millennia. They are often too large to be self-reliant and may be dependent on other planets for resources.
Factory World. Also known as foundry worlds, industrial worlds, or mech worlds, are known for their landmass-sized or planetary-wide factories. These worlds were usually resource-rich, particularly ores doubling as mining operations. They were often heavily polluted and exhibited artificial and unintended environmental phenomena such as acid rain, toxic, polluted, or irradiated waste. Despite this, these worlds would also have large populations, particularly made up of workers. However, there would also be centers for commerce, other industries, and trade attracting off-worlders as well. Not all factory worlds were environmental catastrophes, however, and some worlds managed to balance large-scale production with their natural ecosystems, or by moving industries into space, making shipyards on orbital rings. Some planets were already naturally desolate, such as Geonosis, whereby environmental impact was negligible or tolerable for native species. These planets or moons were considered valuable strategic assets, particularly during wartime, as they often made much of the war material used by the Confederacy and the Empire.
Fortress worlds, also sometimes called base worlds, were heavily fortified planets or moons that served as strongholds for various political powers. They boasted bunkers, weapons and ordnance stockpiles and batteries, and housed fleets and garrisons of soldiers. These static defenses were engineered to repel invaders or to deter attack by their mere presence. They could be used to cut off hyperspace routes or act as barriers for invasion of other nearby planets of strategic value. It could also be used as staging areas for offensive actions, having all the infrastructure to support a massive military formation. Some planets could occupy multiple roles as a fortress world in times of war or unrest, such as Coruscant, which was heavily militarized after the rise of the Empire, and layered over with numerous strategic defenses to protect itself from attack from without and within. Fortress worlds were a massive boon to the Imperial Remnant, who used them as pillars of strength to force regional stability and control.
Safe World. Sanctuary planets that were pre-surveyed to suss out any potential hazards or threats. They were usually remote and serene. They would have small populations and limited settlements, use minimal technology, and relied mostly on subsistence agriculture to survive. Some worlds were able to produce more than what was necessary or export other valuables in enough supply to be profitable, but remain unnoticed by higher regional governments. The classification of safe worlds was used mostly by the Alliance to restore the Republic for its limited imperial presence and friendly local populations, who are often pacifist by nature. These planets and moons would be safe havens for political dissidents, refugees, non-combatants, and anyone wanting to flee the close eye of Imperial authorities. Rebel soldiers would often send their families to these places, as well as to keep them out of harm's way or to avoid them being used as leverage against them. Some of these worlds were discreetly armed, mostly as a precautionary measure, as their locations were deeply held secret. Some safe worlds would act as a de facto prison or Imperial prisoner of war camp. The Rebellion typically did not use them as staging grounds or true military hideouts like those found on Hoth or Yavin 4, as they could attract violent conflict.
Slave worlds could be classed under two subcategories. Those that still practice slavery, such as Zygeria or Tatooine, or designated as worlds from which slave populations would be drawn, such as Kashyyyk under Imperial rule, where the local population would be opposed to the practice of being forced on them.
Purse World. This designation was specific to the Nemodians, who classified important colonial assets held by the species. The planets or moons would have the word Nemodia affixed to the end of their name to classify their status as a possession, such as Cato Nemodia or Deku Nemodia, and would often have their own colonial subsets on the other worlds. Nemodians referred to their home world as Nemodia or Pure Nemodia to distinguish it from its similarly named holdings. The term Purse World was expanded during the Clone Wars to refer to any strategically and economically valuable Confederate planet. Thanks for flying with us. Jordan here. Just wanted to let everyone know what's happening here at the Star Lores podcast. Star Lores is now on Discord. If you would like to join the Star Lores Cantina Discord server, you can find a link in the description or on any of our social media accounts. Reach out with a DM or email. We'd love to hear from you. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter by searching the Star Lores podcast. Go ahead and give our page a like and send us a message. You can also email at starlorespodcast@gmail.com. Send us your fan art, Star Wars collections, or fan fictions, and you may even get a feature on one of our pages or even the show. Don't be afraid to offer corrections or add to any of the topics that we discuss on the show. We are also on Patreon. So if you want to help us pay the bills, as well as get a few awesome perks like bonus episodes, access to the private Facebook group, or the VIP section of the Discord server, head on over to patreon.com/StarLores and sign up for as little as $1 a month. And finally, make sure to subscribe to us on your favorite podcatcher app or YouTube, as well as sending us a 5-star review on iTunes. This really helps us reach a wider audience. Enjoy the rest of the show.
Hello, everyone. Welcome aboard the Millennial Falcon. This is Christian.
And this is Jordan.
We're currently camped out on the beautiful planet of Rishi. It's known for its varied environments and beautiful views of the Rishi Maze galaxies, something we'll cover in a future episode. But today we're talking about planets. I have a confession before we get too much into the discussion piece. This episode was surprisingly difficult to write. I expected it to be a lot simpler, and what I had intended originally was that it would be a simple like classification of all the different environmental planets. Like you have desert worlds, swamp worlds, forest worlds, blah blah blah.
Yeah.
But there was a surprising lack of consistent classification systems that I could find online. that were either in universe that were directly applicable to the Star Wars galaxy, which was another debate I had, was to implement like real world NASA classifications to Star Wars planets.
Okay.
Or keep it in universe and kind of discuss, you know, all these different. I was really more interested in the biome aspect of the different planets.
Right.
But it turned out that there wasn't that much written about it. I just didn't find a lot for categorization for this.
Yeah. I mean, the thing about like a lot of Star Wars planets is they not all the time, but typically have just like one environment.
Yeah.
You know, it's a swamp.
Yes.
It's a giant desert. It's
so that actually does bring up an interesting question that has come up in the past amidst the Star Wars community.
Yeah.
Of whether or not it's a disservice to, you know, you have these unique and varied species and the potential for having unique and varied planets.
Yeah.
But how a lot of them come up with this like mono environment.
Yeah.
There's a couple of schools of thought on that.
Okay.
So
let me hear this.
Yeah. So if you look at real life, the first question is a lot of planets do exhibit some form of what we might consider a mono environment. Now that discussion becomes somewhat complicated. Earth is very unique in the sense of all these different biomes and regions that we have. But a planet like Mars, even though it does have varied, I'm not good with like geological terms.
Like topography?
Not topography, although that will come up later. Like seasonal environmental weather.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Differences.
Sure.
In different parts of like the north would still be colder.
Right.
Mid region would still be somewhat tropical, even though it's all mostly sand and rock.
Right, yeah.
But that is the case for most planets in our solar system. You have like even the gas giants, other than for odd things like the storm on Jupiter, a lot of these strata, even though they're different, yes, a lot of it is consistent on the planetary surface. But when you do delve into the topography of different planets, there's also variance within a subset of it. So like, yes, it's mostly sand and rock, but they take on different geological formations.
Yeah.
So whether or not you'd classify that as an entirely different thing, and Star Wars does the same thing, is what I was going to say. So even though Tatooine is mostly just desert, you have canyons, you have the Dune Sea, you have variances within its biome.
Yeah.
And again, is that more a question of course it was done first, like in reality, it was done because it's easier to film on location in the desert and just say the whole planet is a desert. It's easier to film in the mountains and say the whole planet is mountains.
Yeah, yeah.
But there is that in reality where you have these kind of mono environments in a lot of our planetary systems with that subvariance within it. So is it fair to say, well, yeah, it's boring because it's just a swamp, or is there all these other like layers to that swamp?
Yeah, I mean.
And is that true to life is the other thing.
Yeah, the way that, unfortunately, though, the way that it's, like, often presented is, like, very mono environment. Like,
yeah. You know,
if there is diversity in it, it's not really shown. And I'm not sure that, I'm trying to think even of, like, video games or comic books that would, like, maybe
stress those differences.
Yeah.
Yeah, you kind of have to go into, like, the,
like, the only thing,
encyclopedic resources that, like, actually point out, like, in this region, there's this. And
yeah. Like Tatooine sort of has, it does have a little bit of difference. It has, like, its rocky canyon mountain areas, and then It has the Dune Sea, which is just sand.
Yeah.
Right? It's, like, an ocean of sand, and that's all it is. And but that's like the most difference you get to. It's still, you know, an arid planet with.
Yeah, but if you look at Mars, you have sand and rock and like ice on the caps, which sure, that's a third distinction.
I mean,
but
Mars
is it really that different?
Yeah, I mean, Mars is kind of a desert planet, I guess.
Right, exactly. So that. When you have like a desert planet in your universe, is it crazy to have
When you have a planet that can support carbon-based life forms, it kind of makes sense that it would have to have like some kind of diversity, or you would think it should. But I don't know. I don't know the science well enough to say that for sure. Maybe you could have like a world that's like, other than maybe the polar, what do you call it? Yeah, the polar regions of the planet. Like you could maybe have like just fully tropical jungle, and it that's what the whole planet is, and it could support life. I don't know, but
yeah.
I mean, I've heard that's kind of like Earth was a lot more like that. Like most of it was a lot more jungle and warm, like millions of years ago. But
yeah, so even we were somewhat of a mono environment.
Yeah, perhaps.
So then you're agreeing.
I don't know. Like, yeah, and that's what I'm saying. I don't.
I'm
know
not picking
it well
a side
enough.
In this.
Yeah,
I think it's unfair when fans just like single brush stroke like is boring or it's not creative.
Yeah. There's also the problem of like, and that we've talked about this like with Species, like we're looking at these planets through like a very Earth paradigm. So yeah. we're like just putting Earth atmospheres and environments onto these planets,
yeah.
right?
And,
like,
and that's another thing I'm going to bring up in a sec. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I wasn't sure if you're going yeah. to, but I it is something to bring up that it's like alien worlds might be very alien, you know, like, yeah. You know, a game that actually does like a decent job of like, even though it's like all AI generated, is like No Man's
Minecraft.
Sky. No, not Minecraft.
No Man's Sky. Yeah, which also is I've heard is quite improved than its initial release.
Yeah, I actually a couple of years ago I played it. I spent quite a few hours. Like surprisingly, yeah. got a little hooked on it. It's pretty fun. I'd probably go back and play it again. But
yeah.
I remember hearing when it first came out, it was
like completely lambasted.
Yeah, a lot of people were pretty upset.
Yeah, but I heard it got a lot better after the release.
Yeah, so. Yeah.
But anyways, you're saying the procedurally generates planets.
Yeah, it's AI generated, but they do feel very alien, right? Like yeah. they don't feel...
It doesn't feel like another version of
yeah,
Earth or an environment
that's
on
right.
Earth.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
And to be fair, Star Wars does have some planets that are like very strange. Umbara and
yeah.
Felucia are two planets that do seem very kind of out there. Yeah. They still have trademarks of like, oh, that it looks like an alien jungle. Felucia is a lot like Pandora from the Avatar series.
Oh,
like,
okay.
A lot more colorful and bright, but you can still like draw associations with like, okay, that's a big flower. It's just like a lot bigger.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
But at least they look a lot more alien than. Yeah. You know, Naboo, for example, which is just like, oh, plains,
yeah,
prairie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of seems, yeah, savanna, and then you got a bit of swamp.
Swamp.
Naboo does, it does have different varying
yeah.
environments.
And it has these like cavernous waterways that go yeah. beneath the crust of the surface, which is not something that Earth has, at least not to that extent.
Yeah.
I will say, too, is that these varied planets or Earth-like planets we did mention in the episode do exist also, like Alderaan
right, yeah,
and Naboo.
Yeah.
You do have planets that do feel like Earth or maybe a more lush version of Earth.
They don't have a mono environment.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they do exist and they do tend to be, from my observations, human worlds.
Mm-hmm.
So it does open up that discussion. It is a discussion that's out there in the community. I'm not really picking a side. I'm just trying to present both sides. Like, yeah, it's not...
I don't hate it. Like,
yeah, and it's not that it's not
it doesn't take
quote
away
unquote
from,
unrealistic, yeah. But at the same time, yeah, like you could have some really strange stuff that you could experiment with, or a planet made of diamond, or weird materials, or you know.
Yeah, I do agree. I kind of tend to agree. There could be more creative planets, more imaginative planets, but I don't hate like the you know the deserts and the jungles and the swamps and whatnot.
Yeah. And then the other thing, like kind of going back to what you said about like atmospheric conditions, about it does get a little messy when you have that like humanocentric.
Yeah.
Everywhere just happens to have a breathable atmosphere for humans.
But this is a problem with every sci-fi, like, except for maybe more like I would say sci-fis have gotten better at this in the last 20 years. Like they don't really do that as much. And like the planets you go to are pretty uninhabitable to humans.
Yeah.
But anything like before that, like it was just everything is a, like an M class planet that is habitable by humans. Right?
Star Trek.
Yeah. Star Trek, Star Wars, like Battlestar Galactica. Yeah. It's all the same.
Now there are, again, some defenses there. Granted, it is strange. And if you think about how many alien species there are and how many can share in the same atmosphere,
yeah,
that gets strange.
That's like implausible, if not impossible.
Yeah.
That would ever happen.
Again, I'm going to point to some defenses. There are some significant Star Wars species, and there are
they
stand out because of the fact that they can't breathe our atmosphere, and you see them always wearing like a suit or a mask, like the Keldor, for example. Their mask pretty much defines them. A lot of people don't even realize they're wearing a mask.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But that's not their face. They can't breathe our environment.
You know, the only thing I could say that, like, maybe it's a bit of plot armor, but you could just say, or not plot armor, you could just say the Force, like, made people evolve in a certain way.
Like, not people, but all sentient.
Yeah, all sentient. I mean,
or most sentient life.
Yeah, most sentient life.
So. Yeah, I mean, you could say that. It's almost like everyone, kind of, all life comes from a single source.
Yeah, yeah.
And from that source. That's why all humans and animals, I shouldn't even say that, because even on Earth, not everyone breathes the same air.
Yeah, if you accept...
fish, for example.
No, if you accept what is Obi-Wan Kenobi's definition of the Force, that it is like...
binds all life.
Yeah, it is in every living thing and it is everything. And you reject the more scientism explanation. I think that it's a good explanation.
Sure, yeah. We're getting down to the real nitty-gritty of Star Wars science.
I know this is... Yeah, this is nitpicking here, but... Yeah.
It had to be done, though. Just a side note, there used to be back when College Humor was on and good.
Yeah, back when I haven't watched it.
That's been a while. Yeah. But they had a series called Troopers. I highly recommend anyone listening. It was like a Star Wars knockoff, but they did a lot of like skits about like general sci-fi tropes and things. And they do one that's pretty funny based on this, where I guess I won't spoil it, but it does deal with the mono environment. And
does it?
Yeah, okay. If you just happen to land in a swamp and you just label the whole planet a swamp planet. But like, imagine if it was as diverse as Earth, right? And you just landed on in the swamp and you're like, you just name it. Like, this is the swamp planet. Yeah. You are swamp people. It's like, no, it's very varied and different. Just thought I'd mention it here. Okay. Any more on those areas?
Not really. You want to talk about Endor?
Yeah. So, while doing this episode, we're always going to do our whole contrasting Disney and canon with Legends material.
Yeah.
One significant change from on terms of planets, a lot of them are side planets that they've kind of renamed or changed the origin of or things like that. Some planets that you've obviously visited have to maintain consistency, so they haven't changed much. But Endor has changed quite radically. And it is a central planet as it appears in Return of the Jedi. And whatever the last episode 9 is called, I forget.
Rise of Skywalker.
Rise of Skywalker. The title just makes me mad. So the planet Endor itself is a gas giant. The forest moon of Endor is where the Death Star is orbiting. The second Death Star is orbiting.
Yeah.
That's where the rebels attack. That's where you see the Ewoks and all that. But in canon, I believe, I could be mistaken, it's been a while since I watched it, but the wreckage of the Death Star crashes on the planet of Endor itself.
Oh, is that... I don't even remember that.
Yeah, which shows like a varied landscape of ocean and prairie plains. And it's got a breathable atmosphere. People can live and land on it.
Yeah, that's right.
I probably should have done a little more homework before I brought this point up. But as far as I am
aware... Someone can fact check us.
Feel free to send us a message. As far as I'm aware off the top of my head, and I'm not going to be bothered to look it up right now, Endor, the planet, not the forest moon, has changed from a gas giant in Star Wars Legends to this habitable planet.
Yeah.
Big enough to have the Death Star crash into its ocean and remain physically unchanged over a decade. Maybe less.
Yeah. That's pretty inexplicable. Did you ever find anyone like explain that?
You never really see Endor in the movie.
Or it's just one of J.J. Abrams' like artistic decisions.
I don't know. Maybe it was just for the plot contrivance of finding the wreckage of the Death Star. Although it would be cool if they landed it on the forest moon of Endor where it blew up and you get to like
see that again. Even that whole thing, like, didn't I have to watch Return of the Jedi again, but didn't like the thing just blow up? Like,
yeah, there's a lot of inconsistency here. We're not
like, how did the super laser part land on the intact on the planet
with the throne room?
Yeah,
after being like literally atomized.
Yeah.
How did Palpatine survive? There's a lot of questions here.
It would have made more sense if it was just like, if there's scenes of them flying through space and like pieces were just like orbiting the planet or something.
There's a lot of other cooler ways you could have done the same thing if you had to do it that way. I still wouldn't recommend it, but if you had to go that route.
Yeah.
But just a thing to
point out. So ridiculous.
Yeah. But also gas giants in general do make appearances across all the trilogy. Well, in the original trilogy, they appear. Yavin is the significantly large red.
Yeah.
It's quite striking when you see it in A New Hope. All the X-Wings and Y-Wings kind of like doing a flyby of it when they're going towards the Death Star. And the Death Star is kind of like moving. Yavin is in the way of the Death Star shooting at Yavin 4, which again is a moon of Yavin. But it is true to life to have these gas giants with all these like habitable, well, maybe not habitable, but moons surrounding them, because like our own big gas giants like Jupiter have, I think, upwards of like 30 plus moons, just because they're so big and they have such a stronger gravity field that they collect moons essentially, which is cool. Bespin is another obvious big gas giant, and obviously you have Cloud City because you can't reach the metallic core of the planet because it's just the pressure is so much you'd be destroyed long before you even landed. If you even made it to the end. Plus whatever atmospheric conditions and storms and stuff as you go down through the layers. One thing I did want to mention about gas giants, though, generally, was that there are life forms that do develop on gas giants in Star Wars. Who knows, maybe there's something living on Jupiter. Mm-hmm. But in Star Wars, that, like, if you think about it, how crazy that would be for a life form to develop in an environment where...
with the Force, where anything you can't, is possible. Sure.
You want to go that route? It's cool. I'm just saying it adds to the unique life forms of the galaxy.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, where it's not just like a void. Yeah. Although, also, I should mention that planets without atmospheres, are we just ignoring all those planets in the Star Wars universe because obvious population centers would be planets where people can breathe the atmosphere, which would attract various species that shared the same consistent environmental factors that allow them to live, right?
Yeah.
So obviously your story is going to center in those areas and you're going to ignore all the, you know, rocks and places of the galaxy where there is no life.
Yeah.
The biggest thing I was expecting to see out of this was like, you have a planet like Mustafar and it'd be classified as like a lava world.
Yeah.
And like Endor would be like a forest world and that kind of thing. And I thought it was going to be very clean lines. And it really wasn't. There weren't many environmental classification systems given out. A lot of planets were just like called terrestrial, even though they're obviously like a desert world. So like Tatooine would be classified as a terrestrial planet, but it wouldn't be called a desert planet necessarily.
Okay.
Which is something that I didn't expect. I expected it to actually be in-universe. Like,
yeah,
you have all these desert planets, you have all these ice planets, you have all these lava planets.
Yeah, and water planets. Yeah,
but they, like, short of the ones we kind of mentioned in the episodes, like ocean worlds are pretty obvious.
Yeah.
Gas giants, right? Those ones with, like, actual definable characteristics. But, like, a lot of the terrestrial ones are just lumped together. So.
Hmm. Yeah, that's kind of strange. Yeah, like... Star Wars is pretty good at like classifying like species and weapons and ships.
Yeah.
But like
when it came to the planetary stuff, it got really weird. And
it's just like they don't really have a system for it, you know.
Other than like the atmospheric ones that we discussed, that was it. But again, like it just describes whether or not you can breathe the air, and that also changes between species, so it's not really like a concrete reference system. Also, there's also some planets I will say that are fans' assumptions about like it's a mono environment.
Yeah.
Ord Mantell is one that I was surprised isn't actually a junk world, but like games like Shadows of the Empire, when you
Right.
Remember the trains?
The train mission.
Yeah.
IG-88.
And you also visit Ord Mantell in the Force Unleashed games.
Oh, do you?
Okay. Yeah, and it's, again, same like junk and everything. But apparently there's other environments on that world. And I was looking for something like a junk world or a trash world or something, and there, it didn't exist as a classification, even though we know those planets do exist.
But I could see why it wouldn't. Because, like, you could, it's like the... It's like the landfill in the neighborhood, right? Like, it's, it could be like an old planet that was...
Yeah, it used to be a jungle world, and now it's just been layered over by trash.
No, or they, if all the resources have been extracted and it's practically lifeless, so you just turn it into a trash world, right?
It's like just a rocky husk. Yeah.
That would kind of make sense. But I guess I see what you're saying, like, because there's agri worlds and factory worlds and whatnot. Like, you could classify a junk world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now there are junk worlds in canon, but I didn't find anything for Legends. Even though we know, like I said, we know physically those worlds exist. They're just not, they don't exist as a classification.
What about that comic book, that old comic, Star Wars comic book with the
droid revolution?
Yeah.
No, same thing. Like,
where,
I said.
But what planet was that?
I can't remember off the top of my head.
But that was like a junk world.
Yeah. Again, I'm not saying the worlds don't exist.
Yeah.
I'm saying is they don't exist under this umbrella classification would assume would exist. That I assumed before writing this episode.
Mm.
I assumed, again, you would have these like general feature classifications.
Yeah.
But it just doesn't seem to exist like that. You could look up like all these planets share these traits.
Yeah.
Like, you could look up desert planets of Star Wars and you'd get a list of planets, but it doesn't exist as an official classification.
Right.
So like if you were to actually go through and classify all the planets, you would have to do the legwork yourself and write down like all the features of a planet, put it into this desert category or this varied environment category.
Yeah.
This lava world category, which also gets complicated. So for example, Mustafar to us is like a volcanic world.
Yeah.
It's obviously very hot. You have magma instead of like, you have some solid surfaces, but a lot of magma and stuff too. There's planets that are similar, like in real life. Venus, for example, is very hot.
Yeah.
As far as I know, I don't think it looks like Mustafar in the sense that it has like magma, although it might. But a lot of the heat comes from the atmosphere itself. It's very thick. And
are you sure it wouldn't come from inside the planet?
Well, it's like a crazy greenhouse effect that's going on. And also its proximity to the sun doesn't help.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's a super hot planet. But like it would fall in this weird category. Like it's not really a lava planet, although like
it's also like
it's so hot you couldn't touch down on it.
Yeah, so here's
and the atmosphere thing. Would like
Venus, you
be so acidic, it would like rot you away.
Yeah. But like Venus and Mercury and stuff are so hot, like metal would melt on them almost, you know.
But they do have solid features too.
Yeah. Well, I know, but.
Yeah. No. It would be it's so hot. The temperature. This is where it gets weird, right? Yeah. We're not talking about lava. We're talking about like, any hard structure would melt.
Yeah.
It's that hot, but it's not a lava planet.
Yeah.
Right? In the sense of like Mustafar.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
These are the things that I came across while I was
like Mustafar to me even could have been, I'd have to look on the history if there's like any longer history of Mustafar, but it could just be a planet that's like near the end of its life, right? And it's just.
Or it could be the reverse and be at the beginning of its life too.
Yeah.
And it hasn't geography hasn't settled down. Like it's like Earth when Earth was just created, right?
Yeah.
You're right. I have to look into the actual specifics of Mustafar. But my point wasn't so much Mustafar itself. It was the comparison of real life planets. Like undoubtedly planets just like Venus would exist in Star Wars. Where would you classify our real world planets in those classification systems? And that's why I would debate it. NASA has a cool planetary classification system because we are looking for exoplanets.
Yeah.
And like we want to be able to chart them and see if they're suitable for human habitation or what they're composed of and all that stuff. But I didn't, maybe we'll revisit this with more of a real world lens. But I didn't feel like it, like I wanted to get an in-universe perspective and it just wasn't there.
Yeah.
And I wanted to be clean cut and simple and like, oh, that's cool. I didn't know all these planets were like classified as this or an environment I'd never even seen before.
Yeah.
But it wasn't the case.
Yeah.
So when you look up any individual planet, it might say there's something. There's like, this is a night world, for example, for like Umbara, which is like always in darkness. But again, like that classification doesn't actually exist as anything. Like I said, you might land on a planet that's all trash and it's a trash world, but it's not an official classification.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think, I don't know, I think like in the script you did a good job of like covering like all the types of planets and what they're used for, basically. Yeah.
I was looking for what was there.
Yeah.
I can't, like if it were me, I would go back and make it up, but that's not reflecting what the reality.
I think also the trouble is, unless you're Disney, is you're always trying to make a new unique planet.
Yeah.
You know,
but then you just write Jakku and it's just
Yeah. But that is the problem that Star Wars kind of suffers from, is like every planet has to be something novel. So it's always going to break the like classification system, yeah, whatever that may be.
Yeah. I want this planet to do this weird thing.
Yeah.
But then other times it's not like Utapau. Sure. It has all these big like cenotes essentially that people live in.
Yeah.
But like there's a lot of greenery. There's water. Could be classified as like a, I don't know, tropical or something like that world, yeah, right? So again, yeah, maybe it just is too hard. And again, those varied worlds where, sure, maybe you have a swamp planet, but what do you do if it has a polar ice cap?
Yeah.
Is it no longer a swamp planet or considered a swamp planet, right? Like, I don't know. I just wanted to temper people's expectations. I know I had to temper mine when I came into this, where I was like, what I really wanted was like a categorization. Oh, these are all the cool ice worlds. These are all the cool, yeah, desert worlds, but fortunately, it was not to be, which just means we'll have to do individual episodes on every planet and just work our way through them all.
Yeah.
But that's pretty much all I got for this episode.
You just wanted to make a correction about, yeah, Mon Mothma?
A couple of corrections here. We'll get one out of the way first. So a while back, we did mention that Mon Mothma was, I believe we called it, her Alderaanian, and we're called out by a fan on Twitter. I can't remember your name, otherwise I would credit you with it. If you want to give me another shout out, and then I will do that again. But yeah, she is from Chandrila. So our apologies for that. And then just from our last episode, just kind of a dumb historical thing, I did mix up the two different triumvirates of Rome. I mentioned Crassus, who was part of the first triumvirate, with Mark Antony, and Augustus/Octavian, who was part of the second triumvirate. I just have to get this out there because I know someone out there is going to listen to it and be like, nah, nah, nah. So I'm just saying, yes, I mixed them together. That's all. I recognize that.
Well, I forgive you.
We'll see if everyone else is so generous.
Yeah.
Any final thoughts?
No, just everyone like, follow us on socials, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and Discord. Please leave a 5-star rating review on Spotify and Apple or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also support the show on Twitter, or sorry, Patreon, patreon.com/StarWars, Star Lores, and get exclusive content for $3 a month. Anyways, any corrections, comments you want to bring up, email us at StarLorsPodcast@gmail.com, or you can DM us on any of the social medias.
Yeah.
All right. I think that's it. Peace.